between us can work.
All right. So, yeah, thanks again, everyone, for choosing this session. I know you had a lot of choices. I'm glad you chose this one. So originally, as we talked about earlier, this talk was supposed to be 15 minutes, so I cut all the horrible jokes that I had planned. So now that I have 5 more minutes, we'll see what happens. Okay. So in Georgia, in the late summer and early fall, we were experiencing an extremely high call volume. We had everything ranging from kind of legitimate clinical concerns to concerns from the public about, you know, they knew someone who knew someone who might have traveled to Africa at some point in their life. So we were experiencing this high call volume. In October, we were directed to begin monitoring of travelers. And so at that time, we realized we needed to rapidly develop a surveillance system because in Georgia, we were going to have a lot of travelers, and we knew that. We needed to define risk categories and control measures, and we were going to use CDC's recommendations as a basis for that, but we needed to kind of determine what would work for Georgia. And we also needed the capacity to monitor large volumes of travelers and also to respond to the public calls that we were getting. So what Kathleen was mentioning earlier, the resources. So the first thing we did, addressing high call volume, we have the Georgia Poison Center. This is their phone number if you ever want to call them. They are staffed for limited volume of calls, but they can surge with existing staff and overtime. They have been a really huge key in this response for us. We actually utilize them for temperature calls for people who can't report online. They're able to call Georgia Poison Center, report their temperature to them. They send it to us as a file, and we're able to enter it into our electronic system. We also have something called the Super. This is a message line, so you can call, and if you have a concern, you can press a certain number and get a message. So that can be activated just to get messaging out widely. We have our epidemiology Ebola response team, which we also took calls there. And then also Georgia Poison Center has taken over 1,500 temperature reports as of June 12th and 304 clinical inquiries, which have been passed on to our medical epidemiologists. So addressing the need for definitions of exposure risk, again, it was based on CDC guidance. CDC sets the lower limit, and it varies from state to state in case-by-case interpretation. So as Greg spoke about, some of the states, he mentioned Louisiana, you know, set those limits a little higher. In Georgia, we really went with the CDC's recommendations for who would fall into which categories based on their assessment. So active monitoring, as you guys all know, travelers must report to public health daily for 21 days. So temperature and symptoms are taken twice a day. They're reported to DPH once a day, either online or by phone in Georgia, and I'll talk a little bit about our online system in a moment. So we require that people report by noon. When they report at noon, they report their temperature and symptoms from the night before and that morning. If they haven't reported by around 2 to 2:30, they receive an automated email to remind them to go in and report. Obviously, this doesn't go out to the people who report by phone. But at 3 p.m., they become non-compliant in our system, and we start calling them and reminding them to report, or taking their temperature, entering it for them, and reminding them to do it the next day. Luckily, we have a very high percentage of compliance, so we don't have a lot of these calls every day. And usually we may have a lot that would technically be non-compliant at 2, but by the time they get that email, they've entered it before 3. We also do an initial exposure risk assessment, and that determines the monitoring type and restriction. So instead of meeting them at the airport, as Texas talked about, we do that risk assessment with them over the phone to just ensure that what they gave at the airport as their information is still accurate. So Georgia has about 130 travelers to monitor at any given time. So response by risk category for asymptomatic travelers, what we have worked out is that low but not zero risk, so these are people who have just traveled to that country, they undergo active monitoring and they need to get travel approval. So if they want to travel to Colorado, then they would let us know, and we would send Colorado a notification through FEX and let them know, you know, this traveler's coming to visit, here's where they're staying, here's the phone number to reach them, and we would also work out with whatever state that is, who's going to maintain monitoring. A lot of that depends on how long the traveler is going to be there and also if they'll be returning to Georgia within their monitoring period. Since we do have this great system I'm going to talk about in a couple of minutes, we do like to continue monitoring a lot of them just because it's very easy for them to enter into it. They also sign a self-monitoring agreement. Some risk travelers, these are generally people who have provided patient care but have no known breach in PPE. They do direct active monitoring. This is where we watch them take their temperature at least once a day. It's generally done by FaceTime or Skype. We also confirm with them that they're feeling okay, and you know, talk if they have any concerns or questions. They have a travel and movement restriction, so no public conveyance, and there's a few other things that we ask them to kind of restrict their movement on. And they are issued a limited quarantine order. High-risk travelers are direct active monitored. They are quarantined, and they are issued a quarantine order. So addressing the need for a surveillance system. So we created the Ebola Active Monitoring System. This was a collaboration between IT and our epidemiology department. We have an amazing IT resource, Carl Sotobayer. He's here at the conference. He already has a job, so stay away. We rapidly developed this novel system in about 6 days. We used our state electronic notifiable disease surveillance system as a secure platform. And two epidemiologists can monitor over 100 travelers a day using this system. This doesn't necessarily include the enrollment. Two epidemiologists are usually able to do that, but we do have other people in the office that provide surge support when we maybe have a lot of passengers coming in or a large number of flights. So this is kind of a diagram of our system and how it works. So DGMQ provides the traveler with symptom monitoring kits, which include the care phone and a thermometer, and then they send the line list to us through FEX. We contact the traveler and establish an online monitoring account for the traveler. The traveler records temperature and symptoms daily in the online tool, and we monitor the traveler for symptoms and reporting compliance. The traveler may also present to Georgia in an emergency department. We have given our hospital partners the ability to query our list. If they put in the last name, date of birth, they can see just the name if the person is being monitored. If they're not, then nothing comes up, but they can still call us if they have other concerns or if they want to make sure that that person is not on the list. We also provide weekly summaries to CDC. So this is what the traveler record looks like to us at DPH. So you can see in the top we have demographic information for all of the travelers. We have their district, we have addresses, we're able to capture multiple addresses. We have a lot of people who may travel, you know, to see family within the state, or they may not be a resident of Georgia. They may be staying with us because they don't want to stay in their state because they have slightly stricter monitoring habits. So we are able to capture those addresses and the dates they're there, as well as contact information for those addresses. The Ebola follow-up, you'll see the little note there, in an actual record, that is just chock-filled with information. Every time someone talks to a traveler, they document what they talked about so that any one of us at DPH can log into a traveler's record and know exactly what's going on with that traveler at any given time. At the bottom, and I think this is going to go into it, so you can see the Ebola-specific information. We talk about if the traveler has been contacted and the date of contact, that initiate their monitoring period within the system in a sense that they're expected to start reporting after they've been contacted. The reporting type, it's online versus on the phone, and that can indicate how we should contact the traveler. Monitoring type, that would be active or direct active. We can then put in a username and password. We can create that ourselves. And when we save everything, it sends to them through an email. They're able to log into a system that I'll show you in a second. Also, the date arrived, that's what determines their 21-day monitoring period within the system. Traveler status, usually it would say okay. Carl is non-compliant right now. This was his test record. We have the country they traveled from, country of residence, their passport number, DGMQ ID. We also have their mini risk assessment in here. And something that's been added to this since this screenshot was taken was we now ask about companion animals. So we ask them just to identify if they have any, if so, how many and what kind. And that's just so that we know if something did happen, we know what to expect if we need to bring in our animal control partners and if we need to contact someone to care for that animal. This is our dashboard, so this is what we see. The grayed out area would be traveler names. You can see at the top if someone reports any Ebola symptoms or any symptoms at all, they move straight to the top and their status is symptomatic. We're also sent an automatic email to everyone who works on the Ebola team that lets us know that someone has reported symptoms, and those people are followed up on immediately. So those symptoms may be something Ebola specific. We've also seen things like sore glutes or ate too much Indian food the night before, things like that. So obviously we go in and check before we call the traveler to make, you know, to know what our index of suspicion is before we call them. But we do follow up on every single one of these and just make sure that they're feeling okay and that they, you know, understand what's expected of them as they're not feeling well. The non-compliant people you see below that, needs contact are people who haven't been called yet. Attempted to contact is someone we've tried to call but haven't been able to reach. There's also a drop-down you don't see here that's needs home visit. So if we've tried to contact someone for 48 hours and can't find them, then one of our district health department personnel goes out and physically tries to find them. Most of our people say okay. Moving over to the shaded blocks, the yellow is the 21-day monitoring period. So at a glance, you can tell how long approximately somebody has left in their monitoring period. The dots indicate where they've reported their temperature and symptoms. Red is when they've reported some type of symptoms. And again, that may be fever or it may be sore glutes. So just seeing the red doesn't mean that that person was really, really very ill. You can see the orange shading. That indicates that the person is traveling outside of Georgia. If it's blue, it would be traveling in Georgia. And if they were purple highlighted, that means they're being direct active monitored. So a lot of people might have done direct active monitoring for a portion of their 21 days and then may have done just regular active monitoring for the rest. So you would be able to see when they would end direct active monitoring and then begin to be able to just report on their own. Something you can't see because the names that are highlighted in blue are CDC employees. And obviously you can't see that now because we've grayed out the names. But names in black are non-CDC employees, names in blue are CDC employees. So we're able to tell a lot of things just at a glance from looking at this dashboard. So this is what the traveler sees when they log in. So again, they log in every day by noon and report their temperature and symptoms. They're able to choose from a drop-down list what time and what day it is that they're reporting. This is also a great thing because they can see what day number they're on. So they know when their monitoring period is going to end. These photos are very graphic. They're straight from the traveler kit that they receive. But there's not a lot of ambiguity to them, which is really good for people who maybe English is a second language, but they're comfortable reporting online. So they're able to view this. So most people choose okay, no symptoms. Another update that's been done, you know, this is always an evolving process, is the list additional symptoms here. So when we first put this in, it just said, if you have other symptoms, put them here. And we found that a lot of people were writing okay, no symptoms in there. And it was telling us they had symptoms, because if you write something in that box, it's going to alert us. So we changed it and had it in bold that says, if you have no symptoms, please click this and leave the field below blank. That also did not work. A lot of people were still putting no symptoms. So what we've done now is now it says, if you have other symptoms, click yes. There's a checkbox, and then it opens the text box for them if they've clicked yes. We have found that that works. So you learn something new every day. They're also able to report to us if they have travel. So again, we report to other states if they're going to be moving across state lines. So that gives us a heads up that somebody is doing something. So Carl has said he is going someplace warm by boat. So, but he has to come back to work because we need him. So this is the hospital query. So again, a hospital can sign up for this. They're able to go in and put a last name and a date of birth and press search. If that person is on the list, it will show their name, the date arrived, and the date that their monitoring period ends. To be clear, like, our travelers report to us if they're going to be going to the hospital, if they're going to be seeking medical care. They understand that it's helpful for us and them because we can help to liaison between them and their medical provider so that they don't receive any issues or pushback when they arrive. It's highly unlikely that someone would ever show up there that we don't know about. We don't know they're already going, but this gives our hospital partners some peace of mind when they are concerned about someone who has come in. And we also, as you guys know, we have people who may lie and say they've been to West Africa because they just want to receive care faster. And so this can kind of help them to navigate those kinds of situations. So in January, we began integrated monitoring with CDC. So prior to January, CDC employees were expected to report both to us and to CDC. It was onerous for the travelers, and we wanted to try to alleviate some of that duplicity that they were experiencing. So we worked with CDC and integrated our system and gave them the ability to log into it and see only CDC employees. So they see that dashboard that we see, but they can only see the ones that are highlighted in blue. So they don't see our other Georgia travelers. CDC, we started out with just that. We were still enrolling CDC employees, but CDC was able to kind of observe our system from their place. But now we have worked through more obstacles and worked with them closely, and now they actually enroll their travelers. So they use our script and they enroll CDC travelers into our system, but they do it from CDC. So CDC travelers only receive a call now from CDC. They also deliver our Georgia self-monitoring agreement, which is signed by our senior DPH staff. And they also follow up with non-compliant or symptomatic employees. And again, this really helps out with having CDC employees not having to answer, you know, a ton of calls in a day from a lot of different people. So again, CDC uses our Ebola active monitoring system, and this account is special, so they can only see CDC employees. And it communicates great, or facilitates great communication between all of us. Again, they use that note section we were talking about earlier, so us, we at DPH are able to also know what's going on with CDC employees. So our summary of what we do and have done is, again, we monitor about 130 travelers a day. As of June 12th, we have monitored over 1,600. 34 have been referred for medical evaluation. 8 of them were diagnosed with influenza, 10 with viral upper respiratory infection. The rest were a plethora of traveler's diarrhea, malaria, chronic disease complications, viral infections, and pregnancy. We have tested 6 people for Ebola. They were all negative. We have monitored 27 some-risk travelers. So again, that was direct active monitoring. One person talks to them every day via Skype or FaceTime, so they have one person to talk to. So we've done that with 27 people. We have also had 6 high-risk travelers, and they were all quarantined. Something I'll touch on in a minute. None of them were Georgia residents, which was really fun. We have also improved processes, and we have hired some Ebola EPIs and weekend Ebola EPIs to sustain this effort as the rest of us get back to our regular duties. So quarantine in Georgia, we have the authority to issue orders. DPH at the state is able to issue isolation and quarantine orders. Local county boards of health can issue isolation orders, and these can be issued without prior court approval. However, we have developed a quarantine order, and again, the self-monitoring agreement that have been pre-signed by our DPH leadership so that we're able to issue those when needed. Refusal or failure to comply in Georgia is a misdemeanor. Public health can also seek law enforcement assistance if we need it. Luckily, we have not had to do that at all. We can also issue a court order for injunction or restraining order. So again, we've had 6 healthcare workers with high-risk exposures, and there are many challenges implementing quarantine. With quarantine, we needed to find places where those people could stay for the duration of their quarantine. I don't know how many of you in here, if you owned a rental property, would want to rent to someone who is known to have been exposed to Ebola. Not a lot of people do, I'll tell you that. So we did have issues with finding housing for these people. There's also complications around who's going to provide meals, how are they going to get there, who's going to go see them in person. And then the biggest thing is the difference between a basic need and a luxury item. These people have just come back from an incredible experience that can be very taxing, and so there's mental health concerns as well. But, you know, is a hammock a luxury item, or is that a basic need? Is, you know, where does the line draw between cable and internet and things like that? So these were things that we really had to work through and learn throughout this process. Some of the challenges to responding to ill travelers, when do we seek medical evaluation? So sore glutes, you know, is that a medical evaluation? No. But where do we draw that line? How do we seek medical evaluation? When do we recommend testing, and how do we facilitate testing? So patient evaluation. In Georgia, if you have symptoms of Ebola, so Ebola-specific symptoms, or fever over 100.4 with no clear alternative diagnosis, then you receive evaluation with a medical provider. We evaluate everyone over the phone and determine whether or not that person needs to be elevated to the next level. Obviously, things can be easily confused with flu or other viral diseases, malaria, things like that. The decision to evaluate is based on symptoms and exposure risk category, and the decision to test is based on medical evaluation and sometimes public concern. I'd also like to just point out, if we have someone who reports a temperature of over 99.4, we do ask them to self-isolate and stay home from work, so we don't have someone going into work with 100.3 degree fever or anything like that. So some of our issues also related to occupational school and healthcare. We had businesses reluctant to allow travelers or immediate family of travelers to come to work. We had schools not wanting to allow children of travelers to come to school or spouses of travelers to teach. We had physicians who did not want to provide routine healthcare to travelers. And so we and partners developed letters of support where appropriate. These issues have subsided some, but they are present even now. So we've written a lot of letters saying, you know, that a student is allowed, should be able to come to school, especially if they haven't traveled, and especially if they don't have any risk at all. But also in those kind of gray areas of, you know, someone who has traveled and, you know, the business needs to make the decision, but we have supported that there's not a medical or scientific reason for that person not to work. So we have a three-tier hospital plan. You guys, I'm sure, have seen this, so I won't dwell on it. Treatment hospitals, hospitals designated to treat Ebola, diagnosis, those that have the capability to manage a suspect case. They're able to collect specimens and to transport to hospitals for treatment if necessary. And then at the bottom are the identify and isolate hospitals. So these are hospitals that are able to identify someone as a potential Ebola patient and to isolate them so that they can be transported to one of the other hospitals. We have 25 EMS zones. We also have the dedicated phone number for triage and EMS coordination. So again, that 1-866 pub health number for our Georgia Poison Center. So we also have worked with EMS preparedness, guidance for EMS and 911. We utilize the Infectious Disease Transportation Network. We have 25 regions, and there's a provider in every region prepared to transport a suspect Ebola case. It's all centrally dispatched through our Atlanta Metro EMS, which is great because we don't have to call every single one of those 25. We call the one central dispatch in Atlanta, and they're able to help us with that situation. This has improved communication between EMS and public health, which will carry forward to other issues, anything we have in the future. Laboratory response, we've issued guidance on safe sample collection, handling, packaging, and shipping. GPHL, our public health laboratory at the state, is a certified Ebola LRN reference lab. We also have designated hospital lab for routine testing, so CBCs, things like that. And Georgia State Patrol can also transport samples for us. We also had identified additional training was needed for Category A substances, and a lot of people have undergone that training at our GPHL location. They offer that training for free, which is fantastic, so a lot of people have taken that training. So just to wrap it up, this has been incredible advances in preparedness for Georgia. We've realized the importance of having a surveillance platform and the IT staff to rapidly deploy a system. Again, Carl and our IT, all of our IT staff were really we couldn't have done this without them. Collaborations and relationship building has been really important, and we continue to do that. So we're also wondering, where do we go now? So how do we sustain this effort? How do we institutionalize this knowledge, and how do we build on our advances? And that's what we're currently working on. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Amanda. Do we have any questions?
So in Pennsylvania, almost all of our passengers we've been monitoring have been travelers from West Africa, since they don't have necessarily permanent residence in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So, and I love your online system. We haven't done anything like that since we didn't think it would work very well with people who didn't have, you know, permanent homes that might not have internet access or computers or smartphones. Did you find differences who was able to use the online system between U.S. citizens with homes in Georgia?
Well, certainly there's been a difference. I mean, we have a much higher rate of persons that are U.S. citizens or Georgia citizens that are able to use it. But we do have a large West African population, and a lot of them are able to use it because a lot of them are staying with maybe family, and that family may have a permanent residence in Georgia. So they're able to, you know, assist them with that entry. But also, again, we have that Georgia Poison Center, and I would say most of the people that use that system are people who don't have permanent residence or don't have internet access, obviously, but or are more comfortable with the phone usage because maybe they are from West Africa.
So then a follow-up to that, so if the poison control folks would intake the call, and they would enter the data into your system?
No, so the Georgia Poison Center, they take the information and they put it into a secure message and they send it to us, and then we enter it in. And so because we expect those all day long, and the temperatures come in during the morning because people need to call in by noon, those get entered pretty quickly. We really haven't had a problem. And again, actually most people, I'm not sure the exact percentage, but most people use the online system, so we don't have just a really large number of those coming in. No. Yeah, Emory took the lead on that situation.
Politically sensitive question. Any last questions?
No. Great. Well, thank you to both of our speakers and for your flexibility for this morning. So please enjoy the remainder.
And
morning.
I just want to throw something in really quick. Sorry, I didn't have an acknowledgement slide, so I want to acknowledge Audrey Kunkus. She's sitting in the audience. She did a lot of work on this as well. So I thank her. And there's also a lot of DPH people who did an amazing amount of work. Wendy Smith was in here earlier, and she stepped out, but she did a lot of work. Our entire Ebola staff, Audrey just happened to be here, so I did embarrass her. our entire Ebola staff, we have a CFO, Laura Edison, who has really run this from the beginning, and she continues to work nights and weekends, taking Chick-fil-A to high-risk people and letting them borrow her husband's bike. She has been amazing. Again, all of our, you know, executive team and everything, and as well as, you know, just the staff that we have at our district levels have been really amazing. So I just want to thank everybody for that.
Thank you. It's a very creative solution for our town. Thank you.